Hey everybody, welcome to Real Life Sci-Fi with Wade and Willie. I'm Wade.
I'm Willie.
This is a podcast about the paranormal and contemporary mythology. Join us on patreon.com/reallifesci-fi for access to two bonus episodes a week, video feeds, and more. Visit reallifesci-fi.show for all of our other stuff. And hey, once again, I think this is the last time I can say it. Maybe not. Go see Companion in theaters January 31st. Our friend Drew Hancock wrote and directed it. And so, give him your money. Give him your money.
Throw your support at him, yeah.
Do more stuff. Let's welcome aboard the SSRLSF for his third time, filmmaker and philosopher, Stephen Reedy. Hey, Stephen.
Hello. Third time. Good to see you both.
The three-time club. Thanks for doing it. You're always great to have on. Haven't we always kind of talked philosophy and symbology with you? Have we ever talked about like aliens and stuff? I mean, I know you've done the wow scale, but are you into like the kind of more like fringe stuff?
Yeah. And you know, much like the symbolism and all of that, my whole shtick is I want to understand the logic between the seemingly illogical, right? Mm-hmm. And so aliens are the one topic that it would just absolutely make sense if they exist. I have not necessarily had an alien experience, so I really have nothing to go on except I'm terrified of them. They're my phobia. And they're probably real, but I can't.
Why are they your phobia?
Because you
seem pretty well equipped to handle them, right?
Like I could handle Los Angeles wildfires, earthquakes, spiders, sometimes 405 traffic. But the idea of aliens scare me. And I don't know why, but I have this memory. I think it might have been a dream that I remembered as real when I was a kid, that aliens were watching me sleep. So that's why.
You know, like I've the one had behind a fear you. For a long time. No, he's oh, talking this one. That one. Yeah. Creepy one.
Similar to that. Not exactly that, but similar.
They vilified aliens so much. It's so sad too, because I believe in them. I believe that they are probably more peaceful than us. And I have just been terrified of them for most of my life. I hope I'm over it.
you know, sort of the way we treat animals, I don't necessarily want to be on the receiving end of being treated that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm talking as a humanity, like, I thought my cat was back there. You know, I have pets and stuff and I love them, but I also eat like, you know, chickens and cows and I feel bad about that.
I'm trying not to eat cows and pigs now. Chickens, I don't give a fuck because chickens are like annoying and stupid. But pigs and cows are like, they seem smart and cute.
Yeah, they seem sweet. Yeah.
I've raised chickens before and they're hyper stupid, but they do they do love the people who feed them. An approximation of love. I'd walk outside, I'd stick my arm out and all four chickens would like land on my arm and like cuddle and stuff. It's like they're super stupid pets, but there's something endearing about something that literally has half a brain cell. It's hilarious. But I still ate chicken while having pet chickens, which I'm still dealing with.
What did you do with your chickens?
Well, here's the deal. I adopted them because I was actually saving the life of a duckling I found, and they're social creatures. So I had to get chickens so they could all play together, because without socialization, they die, basically.
Right.
And I raised them in my bedroom in a trough with a heat lamp and all that. I cleaned it like twice a day because I'm actually a very clean person. So having chickens next to my bed is weird. Eventually, they just adapted to the backyard. My dogs and my cats were down with them. They all played along in a flock, you know? And then probably towards the end of their natural lifespan, they learned to use the doggy door. And they kept coming inside and pooping over the entire house. So I gave them to a farm. And I didn't ask questions. I know they would be raised. I didn't know what would happen at the end of being raised, but I had no options.
Did they lay eggs?
They did lay eggs, not a tremendous amount. And that's weird because they were fed. They had their nutrition. But they did lay some. And I never ate a single one, actually. I don't know. I just didn't. Yeah.
What'd you do with them?
They would just be there. And to be honest, I'm going to guess like raccoons and stuff stole them in the middle of the night because they just weren't there after they were there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, anyway. Dude, everything wants to eat those.
Yeah. And this is up in the Bay Area, kind of outside of San Francisco. Where it would get cold, but we built a chicken coop for them, but they would actually go hide inside a bush, like in a ball, to keep warm. It's like, all right, you don't want the heat lamp, that's fine.
Did you name them?
Yes, Rivers Cuomo, because I really liked Weezer, Vash the Stampede, because I like Trigun, Chicken Number 3, and then the other one my brother named, that's why it's not, it's Strider from Mortal Kombat, the Mortal Kombat 2 character, the cop guy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, and also it's important to say that because I was so edgy, Chicken Number 3 was not the third chicken.
Okay. How do you know which one was the third chicken?
I don't even know. They had different colors. I don't know.
what happened to the duck? What was the duck's name?
The duck died after just like 2 weeks.
It didn't even work.
I found it in the middle of a busy intersection. Before touching it, I looked everywhere for the mom. I'm guessing it was dying, and that's maybe why it was abandoned. It was small, it was sickly, but I picked it up. I bought like $100 of like heat lamps and all that stuff, which I was 16 years old, by the way. So
yeah,
$100 was difficult.
A lot.
To a 16-year-old, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I put my entire paycheck into these damn chickens. So the duck died after a week or two, but then the chickens were there and we had them for a while.
I wonder if the chickens convinced the duck to commit suicide.
See, now we're getting real life sci-fi up in this.
Yeah. Because they're like, you're not
was smart and then tried to mimic these dumb things.
Right.
I'm sure I've told this on the podcast before, but you'll hate it. I was a kid and we were walking by the pond, and for some reason the pond had this grate on top of it, probably like 2 inches between each little grate, you know, and water was falling down. I think it was like some sort of irrigation thing that would send it to the other side of the street or whatever. Who knows? There was a family of ducks. It was like the mommy duck and then like all the little ducks following it, right? Mm-hmm. And they're swimming around, and like one of the little babies like is kind of looking at me and my friend. We start like going, oh, come here, little duck, right? And it's like coming at us, and it's going,
oh, no.
And it's so cute, and it's coming right at us. And it's fucking goes down that drain thing. So sad. And we were so upset.
Isn't it weird? The moment you make a connection with that living thing, it's sad, but then you go to a Chinese food restaurant and you order Peking duck and you're like, delicious. Like,
yeah, well, we're all hypocrites.
I mean, I even feel that way. I have house plants behind me. I've had these things for like 14 years, and I'd be sad if they died in a way, you know, sad for half a second, but then I will like eat a salad, and that's the destruction of plants. The meaning in you know, when we align with something personally and it becomes meaningful, that's a very hypocritical thing. Yeah, you're right.
You gotta eat something. I mean, come on.
Gotta eat something.
Salads can regrow.
You could be like one of those fruitarians who like only eats fruit when it like naturally falls off the tree because it's rotten.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm like, no, just pick a couple.
This does tie into the proposed topic of the evening.
Well, should we just do it? Do you want to skip the WoW scale and just jump into it? Because you've done it before, right?
And I've done it twice, and I think I got the same score both times, which is I skew slightly believer.
Okay. Well, that's like,
I don't believe in Bigfoot, and I kind of believe in ghosts. I believe in.
Did you do Illuminati?
Yeah, well, actually, because the Illuminati was for sure a real entity a couple hundred years ago. Is there an Illuminati now?
Yeah.
No. Is there a shadowy governing body on top of everything? Perhaps. Are they called the Illuminati? Not so sure about that one.
Right. So
they might just be called, you know, like Pepsi.
Right.
Oh, and I think I did say something to the idea that if there's a secret government, I'm not going to automatically say they're bad, but they could be.
I know. I'm kind of with you. What if they're just trying to figure everything out?
Yeah, you know? Just like some George Washington, Benjamin Franklin types who are like, man, we're doing the best we can. We're kind of fucking this all up.
All right.
You know? And they're truly selfless, but like, it's hard. It's hard to manage chickens.
People are blaming fires on space lasers. Where did we go wrong?
All right, well, let's skip the space laser button behind him. We're talking about food. You know, I mentioned fruitarians and stuff, and it is quite common, especially in Eastern traditions like Buddhism or Hinduism, that the diet must not involve foods that ground you, and also nothing that involves suffering. So obviously they're vegetarians or vegans. Why is that? They figure that that builds their body, and then they could turn their body into something that has a better and more powerful distinct relationship with subtle energies, in particular, thoughts. And what do they do with those thoughts? And that was my segue.
Wow. Amazing. Wow. Tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi, thoughts. What are thoughts? Where do they come from? And what are we supposed to do with these things? Tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi, quick and short. That's interesting because the latest thing that I've been looking up is how the heart is some weird type of vortex energy. It's not a pump. Mm. And that you can unroll it. It's like a seven-sided figure, and that creates vortex energy. Mm-hmm. And the way the blood goes through our bodies is from basically positive and negative energy. And I don't remember the specifics because I'm trying to learn about it, but it's hard to find shit. It's so fringe. But I try to ground every day. I try to walk with my bare feet in the grass, try to lean against trees, try to have low negative pH water. And so the idea to have positively charged food, I'd like to look into that more, but...
Yeah, well, first off, I believe, is it Arthur Young? I think it's Arthur Young. He's the inventor of the Bell helicopter. And you go on YouTube and find a lot of lectures about the torus fields and the vortexes and stuff. Very dense, very advanced. A lot of those lectures then start to just clog in my brain because they're so advanced. But I think it's Arthur Young.
It is the Bell helicopter, that really funny one where it just had like a umbrella on the top and it did this and they hovered. They hovered for like 2 seconds.
I think close. I am no helicopter expert.
Was just Grumman, and he had to team up with Northrop to start making jets. It was just Grumman.
I don't know what a Bell helicopter is. I think it's the small, like, two-person one. And I think he invented technology in that. You know, that is used in a lot of aircraft. But I know him more for his weird but logical theories. And actually, at the Philosophical Research Society, a whole section of the library is dedicated to him. And he even left a physical torus object made of like wire and cloth. So
what'd you call it? A torus?
Or is it toroidal field? Is that what you're saying?
The same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Torus energy toroidal field. I got a plasma ball, electric ball to try to make your own with magnets. But ultimately, they think that most energies are like the energy of the earth, energy of the sun, magnetism, cymatics are all just
as above, so below. If you sort of understand the general logic and functions of one thing, you could often ratio it up and down. And it's pretty accurate. So, yeah, I mean, like, we do know the magnetic shield around the Earth is similar to that. And that's what protects us from a lot of like destructive solar radiation. It would make sense that anything that is filled with energy kind of has this spinning positive and negative thing going on, because that's how nature works. By the way, we have a guest star.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's a kitten. His name is Mr. Moo.
Mr. Moo, what up? Hey, Mr. Moo.
Talk about, the esoteric mysteries of growing up in a warehouse in Skid Row and being covered in ringworm.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
Anyway, back to the thoughts or you know, that the segue of, like, can you turn the human vehicle into something made of material that is, say, higher vibration? Because, you know, the esoteric mystic stuff is always like high vibration, low vibration. And if you're high vibration, you could resonate with the high vibration better. And the low vibration, same thing. Now, low vibration is dense and slow, usually associated with animalistic traits, simple behaviors, you know, amygdala stuff, reptile brain stuff. And then high vibration enters into where maybe our evolution seems to want to be going, which is better uses of the mind. Because we've kind of mastered the physical.
Is there any actual literal? Those aren't literal. That's just a way of describing a state of mind, right?
No, these sciences, these esoteric sciences, say like what the mystics use or the tantrics believe. Tantra, which is not sex, you know, like, because the Western view is like having sex with hippie you know what I mean?
That's a sting sex, right?
Yeah, it's actually
hours.
An ancient paradigm looking at subtle anatomy and subtle energies and different ways to have a relationship with those. That could include diet, that could include exercise, that could include thoughts. And very much so, it is a belief that there are subtle energies to the human being, and the most powerful one or the leader of them might be thoughts themselves. And there's high vibrational thoughts, which we might see personified as joy. Oh my God, I just saw the coolest thing. It was the best. I'm so happy. Or dense.
Yeah, we've been talking
fuck
a lot, it,
fuck everything.
Been leaning in this yeah. direction lately, you know, and it's just like, yeah, negative thoughts can be very powerful and affect people a lot easier.
That's interesting. So riddle me this. If by default, human nature was generally ecstatic all the time, would it be easier to be ecstatic all the time and harder to be dense, you know?
I think so, because like we all have that friend who walks into a room and puts everybody in a good mood, right? Like,
and sometimes you can, you know, you can feel it. You feel the energy, not just like, oh, he's happy. It's like, oh shit, like it pumps you up too.
Right.
I mean, you know, can you imagine if you were like walking down the street and everyone said hello to you? Like, people in LA don't really do that.
I say hi to their dogs though, every time.
I do too. And I don't even look at them.
I don't even look at that goddamn human. I look at the dog and I say nice things to it.
I get so mad about that. I'm like walking the dog being like, you know, like don't just talk to my dog. I'm like here too.
Right.
Well, sorry, man. You're not cute like a dog.
Well, y'all get down on the ground and roll over.
It is true that it seems to be when you're around a lot of bummer, it's easy to become bummed. When you're around a lot of positive vibes, you could start to feel that. And sometimes, you know, there's that push and pull. I've been in a bad mood and the happy person like kind of has to almost is fighting my sludge. Yeah. Yeah. And then eventually that thing will break through. You know what I mean? Like, I knew this dude who was really grumpy at me. I'm not sure why. And then I think he saw I had or mentioned like Neon Genesis Evangelion, that anime I really like. And he went from like, I'm going to kill you to like, oh my God, dude. Oh my God. Really? And then like, it just opened him up.
You're the one person in the city.
He's almost like hopping around with joy. You know what I mean? It's like fat. Now we're like our Bluetooth connected. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's been about 15 years since that moment. And all of our interactions are smiley now, by the way. When all interactions before that, it was like, get the fuck out of my face. Who are you? Why do I have to be here with you? You know what I mean? So then that's almost like like, is it vibes or thoughts? You know, like, is it more than just a conscious choice to go, I choose to be happy or sad. I choose to think this or that. Is it possible that there are external influences that then we let in or they come in like a virus even? A positive virus or a negative virus, right? Or happy or sad virus. The better question is, are thoughts things? And if they are things, do they do things besides just being ideas that chatter, that we share sometimes?
It feels like, I don't know what it is about these episodes lately, but they've all sort of kind of circled around the drain of, you know, positive thinking or negative thinking and stuff like that.
Interesting. Is it you guys just because did a sigil episode? Which
we
I
just did a sigil episode, and that's what I was just about to say. It's just like, which I really enjoyed because I've never understood how to put my positive thoughts to use because it feels like such a fruitless. When you're negative, it's so easy to put that into action, right? You can punch a wall, or you can fall asleep. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do any number of depressive things. But if you're trying to project positivity, it's a lot harder outside of, you know, smiling at people or whatever.
And then you just said trying to. And I wonder, is there a difference between trying to and just being, you know, like if you're at an event you're excited to be at, you're not trying to be happy. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
I wonder, is there a charged up an extra electricity to authenticity? And then an extra charged up electricity to positivity. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's also like just some days you're in one mood or the other, right? And like, so where does that come from? Because you just wake up and that's the way you are.
Right. I suppose there's internal influences and external influences, or I'm making the presupposition that that's the case, you know, detailed does that get?
What's the whole thing with thoughts? It's like, do they do anything? Yeah, I think that's why I'm when I'm going off on this? Like, well, do they do anything?
Some people think that thoughts are just your brain reacting to the environment, and they're not where they come from. What are they generated from? Oh, I need sugar. I need to, chemically driven, addictive driven, survival driven, environment driven, as opposed to coming up with ideas. That's why I always like if you do anything creative, art, filmmaking, music, anything, like those thoughts that you get to create that stuff, those things, when you hear something and it inspires you to make something else, it's still a thought.
Is everything a thought? If I make a fist, is that a thought? Did my brain go, oh, make a fist, boop, and now I'm telling my muscles and nerves to do this? Is everything a thought?
What about meditation, though? Because then isn't the whole point of meditation to not have thoughts, right? But then you do anyway. So
when you are in a meditative state, they can measure that your brain waves are actually in a different state, the theta state.
In addition to that, if we think about the process of doing anything, here's the process. I'll lay it out like a little timeline. So first, there's just energy inside of you. Let's say it's probably contained in your spine, like just your life energy. And what is life energy? That's what you are, because if it leaves you, your body falls over dead. So life energy, it's not anything yet. It can become making a fist. It could become thinking about, what should I eat for dinner? It could become anything. So then it becomes you're watching the news, and the news is talking about scary wildfires. So now that energy will become the thought of being concerned about scary wildfires. So now this pure energy becomes less and less and less. It becomes something specific. So this energy that could become any infinite action, thought, or emotion in you becomes a specific thought. And one might say it goes from very powerful to weak, because a thought is just a little crumb of your energy coming out.
It's like a solar flare.
Exactly. And so then in meditation, one might say it's telling your mind to stop sucking energy out of siphoning energy away to birth all these thoughts. Because we're always doing that. Thoughts. Social media,
quiet your mind.
News, concerns, So then in meditation, by ignoring all those thoughts, they don't get to plug in to your battery, and then they die away. And then now you're just pure energy, and whatever one thing you think about gets extra electricity, right? Or just all of you just gets extra electricity in general. One thought is that when you're asleep, that's a mechanism of recharging. You're turning everything off. So then energy could go, they stop using the fuel. So then you could refuel everything else. Does that make sense? It's almost like we have a gas tank and our brain's always sucking it down to damn near zero at all times, because we're always thinking. It's like if we could think less or think more focused, it'll fill back up, because it's just naturally always filling back up. So one idea of meditation is to let the gas tank fill back up, because you're not thinking all these thoughts. And then in prayer or mantra or mystic practice, things called pujas, you put that energy into an object or a food, and then devotees would then say, eat the food or touch the object, and they receive energy. Like this is actual practice that happens. Or in Holy Communion, something similar where they put it into the bread and the wine, and then you eat it or drink it. And then that high energy is almost like turning on a UV lamp to proverbial viruses, metaphoric viruses of lower natures, because lower natured things die from sunlight. Or high energy, and high natured things are given sustenance by it. This is just one theory of thoughts. And the idea is that thoughts are things, and you could actually, they leave your head and you could actually like put them into something. This is what a lot of spiritual rituals, and I'm talking the common stuff. If you go to a Buddhist temple or a Hindu temple, they're doing this stuff every day. You know what I mean? So it is real life sci-fi, but it's actually common and mainstream, and so common in mainstream, we actually ignore it. Go into any church or temple and be like, what are you doing and why? And it's something along these lines. Same with prayer, things like that.
And
so
also
I'm not
saying
positive or negative. I'm just saying this is what goes on. What's the possible logic behind it?
If I picture the heart being this vortex energy creator, and that we have this field of energy around us, that, they're talking about being able to read your thoughts by, when you have a wire, you can tell what direction the energy is going based on the circular energy coming off of it. So they're trying to learn how to read your brain, figure out your thoughts by the energy coming off of your brain. They can like rework that backwards and figure out what you're thinking. It makes me think people aren't having deep thoughts when they do this, but it also makes me say that, oh, your thoughts are being put out as energy. I like this idea of, you know, the law of attraction. You shouldn't be focusing on trying to attract things to you. You should be focusing on what you want, and that puts out a vibration. And people that are in tune with you, like two tuning forks next to each other, they will find you because you've put out that energy.
Like attracts like, kind of thing. There does seem to be some kind of truth to that. Like the people I'm friends with, I don't even know how I became friends with them, but we're similar and we're into the same things. And that's wild. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How did that happen? It's not like I sought this out, just somehow through an interaction sort of blah. I'm assuming that's probably how I ended up here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like just being me and thinking the weird things that I think, then we all ended up here somehow.
Yeah, I've heard like from at least five different people. You don't know, you haven't met Steven yet?
I know, for years. Yeah, that's hilarious. So yeah, that's one idea. And then, so there are terms that different cultures have come up with to describe these phenomena and similar phenomena. Some terms are egregores, tulpas, thought forms. Those are three basics. There's a couple others, but those are good ones to start from. And a big one, the most simple one would be thought forms. There is a guy, C.W. Ledbetter, who I think got in trouble for being bad, but we'll skip that part. He took over theosophy, which was an esoteric movement started by Helena Blavatsky. It was very popular once upon a time. But anyway, he wrote a book called Thought Forms. And all of this is sort of taking, I'll oversimplify here, an interpretation of Tibetan Buddhism made mainstream for the West. Say post-Civil War era. C.W. Ledbetter wrote a book called Thought Forms where he says, not only are thoughts actual things, certain people could see them. So he painted what thoughts look like. He goes, here's what thoughts look like in a church. Here's what negative thoughts look like. And they're very asymmetrical and monstrous. And harmonizing thoughts are more like beautiful and flower-like, for example. And the idea is that like you could actually just sit there and you keep thinking this one thing. It's almost like a bubble is coming out of your head and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And they can become the size of cities. They can become the size of temples. And then anyone around them starts not only feeding them, but then being influenced by them to keep feeding them. Almost like they're lifelike, but not alive. They're almost like a virus of sorts, right? Because viruses aren't considered living things, yet they do lifelike things. And then this type of thing is where the word meme came from, which actually means thought virus, right? Because thoughts can be infectious. So then we have these phenomena, not just mystic, cool stuff like what Buddhist monks do or Hindu monks do, which is interesting. But then there's also the phenomenon of just standard society being influenced by mania all at once. There's a term that's arisen called mass formation psychosis, which is to say an entire society could go crazy in the same way at the same time. And the hypothesis is because thoughts can be like a virus and everyone catches the virus for a little while, then it goes away.
We just saw that. I mean, depending on what you believe, the New Jersey drones were kind of that, right?
Like— oh, yeah. So there's an inciting incident. Mysterious drones everywhere. And then some theories about what they might be come out. And then everyone who resonates with that theory and wants to believe or finds logic in the logic goes, okay, that's what it is. And then it becomes this fervor. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it often happens in fear or hope. Hope and fear, two very high and low, right? People can become maniacs in a hopeful way. They could become maniacs in a fear-based way. We see it, COVID caused a lot of this. Some would say that Nazi Germany, the fact that an entire country decided to embrace certain beliefs and actions all of a sudden and all together could be that. There's one thing called dance mania, which is where there's a town, and I forget the details, so we'll have to look it up. But everyone started dancing for like a week.
Yeah, they couldn't stop dancing or something like that.
So all of this just feeds the hypothesis I'm not calling these things facts. We're exploring.
I know, but that's the funniest shit in the world. A whole town no, just starts dancing.
Or I would bet you go to a Taylor Swift concert. Or I remember watching on TV as a kid Michael Jackson concerts, and everyone would just start, they'd burst into tears and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's a good dancer, and this music.
Like the Beatles, good. Right? I mean, the Beatles.
Right,
like
Beatlemania.
Have you ever heard of the Rivers of Pee?
Yeah.
Have was I? It? I was born in them. You hear that? The Rivers of Pee. No, what is the Rivers of Pee?
I'm a pee baby.
Security guard talking about how so many women would just start peeing when they saw the Beatles, that there was just like pee flowing.
Amazing. Amazing. Wow.
No, that wasn't pee, if you know what I mean.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. That's the next real life sci-fi. So anyway, that mob mentality, there is a horrible movie about thought forms. And it is the thought forms part is intriguing. And it's actually showing advertising agencies go create like a McDonald's thought form. And then like a health food store creates like a healthy eating thought form. And they literally Godzilla battle it out over a city. And it shows actually the McDonald's thought form having its tentacles go into like people's heads. And then they're like, I must eat hamburgers. Like I said, it's a horrible movie, but it is a visual depiction of this thesis of thought forms. Where it's interesting is let's say this is true, then that means the news, especially when the news leans into biased fear mongering of any kind, can actually create a thought form because it's beamed into millions of homes. Then everyone goes, oh God. And then it like, this influence becomes a, per this hypothesis, an actual object that is actually influencing people. I talked to a monk who said that in his paradigm, deities, gods and goddesses that are worshipped aren't real. They were created by people, holy people, who wanted to create, say, if you're having trouble with negativity, you pray to this deity. This deity was made and upkept by monks and nuns. And then when you go and pray to it, its influences, which are to help you in this one specific way, comes into you and starts influencing you to behave in certain specific healthy ways. And so he's like, yeah, there's no, he's like, all deities are actually just man-made thought objects.
Wow. I'm that's like, crazy.
And that's, like, and that's so why, much... yeah, worship and all of that stuff is actually just keeping them alive, and they're not real. They just sort of behave real until they run out of juice. And the more everyone worships them around the world, the more juice they have. Buddhism and Hinduism, their traditions never really changed. You know what I mean? Like just what they were doing thousands of years ago, they're still doing. Catholicism and Judaism, I think, might, at least on the surface level, adapt to more modern times and maybe not do all of this stuff publicly, all of this strange ritual stuff. But the point of these rituals seems to be, in some capacity, I'm not speaking definitively here, in some capacity, doing things with thoughts that are beyond material science, right? Maybe it's feeding a thought form entity, or maybe it's just charging up an object. And you could even take, right here, I'm holding this, I bought this at an event, and there's a Hindu saint, and she touches it and like puts energy into it, or, you know, that's the claim anyway. And then you're supposed to like take it home, and now you have this almost like vitamin of sorts, this like little radiation emitting thing that's good for you. And she does it with her thoughts, our thoughts, things. That's a good question.
But you have to believe it, right? For it to work.
See, now that's a tricky one. I don't know. Like, so if right now I haven't had dinner yet. If a hamburger commercial came on in front of me, I'm already kind of primed to resonate with it. And it might convince me to order that hamburger when I wasn't going to have one. Does right. that make sense?
Yeah.
So did I consent to it? No, but was I kind of open to it already? Yeah. Am I a believer that I need food to live? Yes. You know, so I don't right. know. I'm going to guess in some capacity, you do have to give a form of consent, even if it's subconscious.
I'm thinking of those, like, do you guys remember those little dolls that you would like put a, you would like put a prayer or thought into, and then you're, I think you're supposed to put them on your, under your pillow or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They're like little yarn dolls.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot what those were, but I remember them.
I have somebody gave me some or whatever, but it's like, I never believe, I did the thing, but I never believed in the thing. And I'm thinking about crystals too. Like, it feels like you kind of have to believe in the crystal for it to do the thing. I don't know. I don't know what my point is. You just mentioned like she charged that thing with energy, and it made me think of how you have to put your crystals out into the sun or whatever to charge
the moon.
The moon. Sorry. Maybe that's my problem.
I can't answer your question, but I could sort of dissect the thinking, which is that, well, in certain things, like right here, this is a power bank. You know, you plug your cell phone into it when you're on the move and it's low. If I plug it into the wall, I don't need to believe in electricity. It will fill up with electricity. And then I plug it into my phone and my phone receives it. So that's like hard material science. Cause equals effect. When right. It gets into the subtle stuff, it gets a little more weird, because it is a less scientific version of saying, like, yeah, well, by believing, you're kind of turning on your Wi-Fi, but if you're unhealthy or if you ate hot dogs earlier that day, it's changed your vibration, so then you're not going to feel it. And it really smells of bullshit a lot of the times, because it's like, well, wait, if it doesn't happen every time to every person, then I can't say cause and effect. You right. know what I mean? You got to lean more on the cynicism side than the believer side. It's like, well, you're not, but like, okay, how about this? The Secret. Remember that documentary, The Secret?
Sure.
Oh, you didn't get the parking spot because you didn't believe enough. It's your fault. It's like, actually, I didn't get the parking spot because the fucking parking garage is gone. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That was cause and effect. And and it went away because it was an earthquake. Well, you must have caused the earthquake because you didn't want the parking spot back. Like, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. But there are circumstances where I go like, I wonder if I resonate with, say, the hamburger commercial. Is that giving consent to it to influence me? Now take that example and bring it into spiritual realms. But I do know people who really want to go into a temple and feel something, and they never do. And they are dedicated. They are the people who pray 3 hours a day and that stuff. And they're like, I want to feel something and I feel nothing. And other people, just some dude off the streets accidentally walks in because he needs to use their bathroom and he becomes enlightened. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. It's also, I was thinking about, because you're talking about energy and thoughts and belief. And I was thinking about the people who believe that electronics hurt them. Like the main example is the brother from Better Call Saul, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The radioactive fields coming off electronic equipment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm wondering, like, obviously they believe it, but then I'm wondering if the power of that thought is actually causing the harm, or if it's actually a real thing that you just can't.
So not everybody there. Has. This is so funny. I first heard this theory that explains the psychosomatic nature of this from Bashar. You know, the guy who channels or claims to channel.
We haven't gotten into him yet. I know Bashar, but I don't. Wade does not.
Well, the long story short of it, I'll skip over all the details. He comes from sort of a narrative of alien influence to support his philosophy. And I don't know if it's real or not, because, again, I don't know anything about aliens, but he says really smart stuff. So I got to listen to it. And the long story short of it is, he's like, everything is just you giving yourself permission to do something, you know? So is it psychosomatic? Is all of this psychosomatic? It is absolutely possible. But then maybe there's depths to psychosomatic that we don't really realize. Like, I like to think about this. You watch a movie, a sad movie. What's the saddest movie you've ever seen?
Fox and the Hound.
Fox and the Hound is on TV right now. It's flashing lights. Your brain decodes those flashing lights as meaning. That meaning then allows you to unlock chemicals that were already inside of you, but they weren't allowed to come out until these flashing lights that mean sad animal shit is interpreted as something where now you release the emotions. That's psychosomatic in a way. Movies and music are psychosomatic, maybe. I mean, there's a vibration of the sound and the light radiation hitting you. Is that what's doing it? Or is it you doing it to yourself, but you needed this catalyst outside of you? Is that what all this mystic shit is?
If I ever needed to cry and I couldn't, I just put it on Awakenings. I'm like, oh yeah.
Awakenings?
Yeah. The fountain for me.
The fountain. Wait, I don't think I know what the fountain is. What's
the Darren Aronofsky movie that I'm the only one who likes it in all of.
Yeah, see, that might have been the movie that took me off of the Darren Aronofsky train.
It was just, he made it right after Requiem for a Dream. Yeah, Hugh Jackman's in it. I love it. And I think the ending is very powerful.
Is it about the fountain of life or something?
Yes. Anyway, the whole point of this was that is all this stuff psychosomatic or not? All these rituals, these supposed thoughts or things, is it psychosomatic? It is absolutely reasonable to think that. And then you go, well, how deep does psychosomatic go? Because if flashing lights can catalyze you to release your own hormones and chemicals that refuse to be released under any other capacity. And we could say that for any situation. A stressful situation will give you the might and the adrenaline for those 5 minutes to lift a car or whatever. Then we could start getting spooky and weird and say, like, well, would certain psychosomatic things open up supernormal abilities? Is now are these things that we're still speculative about, like clairvoyance or psychism or things like that, can those be opened up by specific types of catalysts? And they're always there. You always had it. And these are fun questions to ask.
Right. I'm thinking of Scare Club, where if you sign up, they're going to figure out what your fear is. And then they'll try to shock the shit out of you, but then ask you questions like right in that moment. Can you tell what I'm thinking?
Like, oh, interesting.
Oh my God.
Interesting. Wow. There are, you know, this is so weird. By chance, the algorithm sent me a video essay on a movie I've never heard of called The Empty Man. Have you seen this?
I don't believe so.
So I listened to the video essay and it spoiled a lot for me. So I won't say it because I don't want to spoil it for you guys or the people listening, but it was a movie that dealt with the notion of tulpas, as did Twin Peaks season 3 deal with the notion of tulpas. One of the characters was a tulpa. What is a tulpa? It's a Buddhist term for a thought form that is so concentrated upon by concentrated thought by like monks that it creates a flesh and blood human with memories and everything.
But that's hogwash.
Yeah, probably. But it's a concept. It's a concept. And also, I always wonder when we come into these really weird, mysticky stories and stuff, I'm a believer that a lot of them are not literal. They're symbolic of some kind of human ability, usually psychological. But tulpas, thought forms, and another one is aggregor, which there's a book called Aggregors, written by an author named Mark Stavish. I listened to it 5 years ago and I've lost a lot of it from my memory, but it was very good. And it's the notion that, again, these thought entities, you could create them. And it is saying that a lot of religions, or all religions rather, you're allowing an aggregor to take you over. And actually then quitting that religion is extremely hard because there's this force trying to be like, no, I'm keeping you here and I'm going to punish you. I'm going to negatively influence you if you don't keep feeding me. So this is one part of the book is saying that religions are actually making a relationship with an invisible life form made of thoughts that is now feeding off of you, but also gives you things. It's almost like a fungus. It's giving you stuff. It's giving you nutrients, but it's also taking nutrients. It's a symbiotic relationship. It's venom. It's, you know, right. Spider-Man villain.
It feels like I'm not ready for any of it. You know what I mean? It feels like if there are people who have figured out how to weaponize thoughts in that way, then I can't compete with that. You know, you've got entire, like the whole Catholic Church is just one big fucking like thought aggregor. And it's just like, well, how am I going to compete with that? You know, I mean, like that's too powerful.
And that is a good question. Assuming there's any validity to these theories, how would you compete with it? No, really. What if Coca-Cola, McDonald's, the Catholic Church, CNN, all of these are Instagram are just these like things going, hey, feed me.
Yeah. I mean, I think just to go back to the very beginning, and it's like, concentrate your thoughts and make sure that they're as powerful as they can be, right? Like,
or refuse to entertain them. So that would be, you know, when the experts who believe in this stuff say what to do, don't entertain them. Just like, you know, the anxiety of that scary work-related thing you have to do next week will keep you up at night. Stop being in charge of me, right? I want to be in charge of you. And I say, not right now. I'm trying to sleep. Right.
See, that's why I really like the sigil thing, because it's an action that I can take. I can make it real. It's sitting right there and it represents something. And I, for whatever reason, that tangibleness of it makes me feel like I'm at least doing something. You know what I mean?
Can you tell me a little bit more about, because I didn't watch the episode yet. I do understand the logic of them, but I want to hear, you know, you just spoke positively about a concept. Tell me about the concept, because I think they're very close to each other, sigils and what we're talking about.
I got the Reader's Digest version of it. Perfect. I got the, but it basically was just like, have a thought, something that you want, write it down. And then what this guy said was to take out all the vowels, use all the consonants to form the sigil, and you just make it up. You just kind of draw it however you want it, and you can alter the letters in certain ways. And then you just remember what that sigil is, and then it's just kind of around, and you look at it every once in a while. He also said, like, you're supposed to concentrate on it for a really long time, almost until, like, you're sick of it or you're exhausted of it. Mm. And then you're supposed to completely forget it and like set not think about it anymore. Yeah.
Right.
Like the cooking thing.
Right. And then because you've done that, is like some would associate them with almost like microchips of sorts, especially because they have those patterns and it's like you've charged your thoughts into it. And then thoughts are magnetic in some way. And then now they're pulling all the stuff in. And the reason you're supposed to set it and forget it is because if you keep concentrating on it, you might keep changing the details.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of it maybe, being the one your intention, you know what I mean?
You might also it might make you think of the negative version of it more too, you know, it's like, oh, this isn't going to happen or whatever. It's just like, put all your intention and what you want and the power of that into it and then let it go and do it with something else, you know? But that symbol, when you see the symbol, it reminds you of the positivity of it. But then it like the way it was described to me, how to meditate is that too, is that like, you want to go deeper into your mind. I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent, but the only way to get deeper into your mind is focused on anything that is entertaining. So you have to trick your mind into being entertained, into being quiet. And you do that by just allowing everything in, allow all the sounds in. And I have a mantra that keeps me focused on what I want to do, but I don't want to focus on the mantra enough to forget that I'm doing something. So it's just like, it feels very similar in that like you're tricking your brain into just focusing on the good part of the thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the Psychology Society, what's it called? The PS? What is
the Philosophical Research Society.
Oh, psychology. Philosophical. The PRS is what you
PRS,
call it?
PRS, which is also a philosophy, religion, science, PRS. It's just exploring those three concepts.
Is it all just academic, or do you've got all of these kind of like theories about things? Do you ever take one of them and be like, oh, this sounds good, I should like kind of do that maybe?
Yes, I do. Yes. And those are the ones I rarely talk about this stuff. I'll talk a little bit about it. And also I want to say I have great humility about it. And I am by far from being any kind of disciplined master. As much as I'm loaded with all this trivia and this ability to synthesize it, knowing this stuff is not the same as doing this stuff. Knowing how to do a push-up doesn't mean I'm doing the push-ups. Does that make sense? I am still
push-ups are hard,
millennial,
dude,
who lives in the world and plays video games. And you know what I mean? Okay. So that being said, I do have what resonates with me. There's a concept called the Ishta Devata. Sometimes it's pronounced differently, but that's the way I know it. And that is the belief that there's all these symbols and practices and worldviews and deities of all the different religions. Maybe it's Jesus, maybe it's Buddha, it doesn't matter. And this idea is that the way you're born and who you are, you will resonate with a concept, a spiritual concept. And when you go near it, when you look at it, you just feel something. So I do have mine. And also when it comes to the ancient Indian stuff, and I have no foundation in Indian anything, but the symbols grab me intellectually. And then just being in the room when stuff is going on, I feel a great power. So I actually attend a lot of these things. I attend a lot of things for all the different religions, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel stuff, sometimes I don't. But I really like being in the presence of certain types of practices going on. I don't do them, or I've rarely done them. Like I've been initiated into a mantra or two, and that's a whole shpadoink where you pour ghee into a fire and you sit there all day and, you know, watch a saint do a mantra for like 4 hours. You just sit there and so I've been part of that. I am of no religion. I am of no belief system, but there are the things I like because I feel something. I think it improves me, but I don't even know that.
But it's nice because you're like a tourist when it comes to this stuff, and you get to kind of like pick and choose what you want.
There's two elements going on. Number one is the intellectual element. And that's where I am. I'm the most open-minded tourist of every possible thing. Bring me to Area 51 and I'll just be an open-minded tourist and go,
yeah,
maybe that was an alien. I don't know. You know what I mean? Bring me to a Catholic church. Bring me to a Buddhist temple. I don't care. I want to observe and see. And then I want to go, what the fuck are you doing? And why? And what is it doing? And why is it not working? Why is it working? Et cetera. That's the intellectual part. And then I don't know why, but I like ingesting all of that data. And then it goes through my immature machine and hopefully it comes out as, you know, words that are understandable for people who don't want to read a 1,000 page book about it.
Do you consider yourself just kind of like a translator for these things? Are you only doing it just because of curiosity? Or are you actually looking for, because if I was to do what you do, which I kind of want to, but I'm too lazy, I would constantly be going like, oh, how can I be happier? Like, what can I take from this to make me happier and stuff like that?
I think there's an era probably around like 2014. I'd just gone through like a breakup and stuff. So I was kind of bummed a little bit. For a little era, I was seeking those types of things. But 2003 is when I really started just being obsessed with this type of stuff. And I think it might have been because earlier I was in a Catholic elementary school and I thought it was all bullshit. And I was so confused. Why are people doing this stuff? And no one can answer it, right? Anyway, the long story short of it is it's so weird. It's the one category of my life where it's pure. Like I don't have like egoic defenses. I don't care if anyone believes me. I don't care if someone says I'm full of shit. I don't care if someone says you're so amazing. None of it like lands with me. It is a pure weird hobby, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know why. And I am driven to share it. I am driven to, dude, I spent hours today writing a lecture for no reason. like why? And it hurts and it's hard. It's hard work, dude. It's hard. It's difficult.
I know.
It's the fourth draft of it. I read it as audio. It's 33 minutes long and I'm throwing it away because I listened to it right before getting on here. And I'm like, it's not good. I'm going to rewrite it for a fifth time for no reason. I don't know why. I don't know why I do this. I'm interested in it. I guess some people play tennis. I do this.
The nuns play tennis.
It fascinates me and it brings meaning to me. And also it's a hobby. It is not my career. Right. So I'm not like, there's no motive.
There's no,
I understood this more.
There's nothing to lose. I like it. I think it's great.
But you know, some people have animal shelters for the same selfless, I don't know why I'm doing it, but I'm doing it kind of reason.
Yeah. That's obvious. It's because they're cute and you can pet them.
Well, and what's funny is I wouldn't share this stuff. So for a great chunk of my life, it wasn't until like 2016 that I actually started like being asked to share it. Because as a nerd, when people are into this, we discuss it and then it becomes bigger conversations, bigger. And then soon people in positions of authority of education start going, hey, that's pretty good. Can we give you some money to give a lecture about it or not give you money? But could you still do a lecture about it? I go, sure. Mm. Just a hobby.
My version is I get into a conversation with someone and then someone else will come in and say something like aliens and then just kind of put a damper on the conversation because it's like, oh, fuck, dude. Like,
their thought that's when you need the other person. Your thought forms.
Yeah, you need the other person that you're talking to speak up and be like, we're talking about aliens. Shut the fuck up. Get on board or leave, man.
Since you actually are in, I believe the shtick here is a sort of like believer and skeptic a little bit.
Yeah, that's the shtick. We don't stick to it very well.
Let me give you some good symbolism here. Oh, and then I have another thing to say about symbolism in relation to all this thought form stuff. But there's a symbol of the hand, right? I wish you could show you. It's framed right over there, but I'm not going to take it off the wall. And it is to say that the thumb is opposition and you need the opposition to truly grasp something. And I got to say, with you being a skeptic, with the two of us being more woo-woo about this, the skepticism not only is important so we don't get conned by bullshit, there's a lot of that in this field, But also it does engage the conversation deeper. So in a way, you're like the thumb pushing against our fingers of open-mindedness.
See, that's great. Violent. I love that. I wish you were around when we conceptualized this, and that could have always been the way that we talked
about
it.
Just rename it. Real life sci-fi, call it the thumb.
The thumb. Right. So when it comes to thought, there's not like a final thought or anything, because the whole thing has been kind of amorphous. But like, is there any sort of like one concrete metaphor or anything when it comes to thoughts? Like, and sure. I don't even know if you believe in this stuff or if you're just
I do believe in it. Yes, I do believe in it, but I don't know to what degree, because I could only believe in it from observation, and my observation does line up with all of these worldviews we're talking about, but I can't prove it. I will not call it a fact. I will say it's an observation that is more consistent than it is inconsistent. And also, I've worked in advertising a lot. So not that we have meetings. How are we going to infect the minds? But you're watching like, hey, is that commercial we made resonating? Why might it be resonating? You know, things like that. I have two things to say. Symbols, which could be logos for McDonald's, logos for Target, or it could be these esoteric symbols that mean these things. First, you're asking about consent. So this is part of your question about like, do you consent to these things coming into you or not? Mm. And my answer was like, it might be subconscious. Once upon a time, when I was a Star Wars nerd, I'd see the Star Wars logo or even the Lucasfilm logo would come up before the trailer for Phantom Menace, and the audience goes crazy. We knew what the Lucasfilm logo represented. It represented everything amazing, right?
Yeah.
And the trailer. And so the logo itself made people go, blah. Now, if you didn't know what Star Wars was and you didn't know what Lucasfilm was, it would do nothing to you. So a symbol is a picture, and a picture is worth 1,000 words. Once you know what a symbol means, because it has affected you in some way, a McDonald's logo, McNuggets are delicious. I'm hungry. McDonald's logo makes me think of McNuggets. Now I'm salivating. If I didn't know what the McDonald's logo was, why would I salivate when I looked at it? And then the same could be applied to these bigger symbols that for Jesus people, the crucifix. For Shiva worshipers, there's like yantras, geometric symbols that would represent aspects of what he's up to. And then you'd literally bow down when you see it because it's so powerful to you that you lay on the ground. You must be programmed to know what the symbols mean. And then they could start doing things to you. It's a little bit of psychosomatic, or it's a lot of psychosomatic, but it requires this external thing being there. I believe that's what advertising is. I believe that's what politics are. That Donald Trump hat, the red hat, one of the most powerful modern symbols I've ever seen. It has the definition of here's the politics. Depending who you are, you're ecstatic about it or you're enraged about it. And I do think this is in the realm of the thoughts that we're talking about. And maybe it is just your own thoughts affecting your own self, or maybe it's the thoughts of many then suddenly being piped into your brain. But whatever it is, symbolism has that power because images can flash 1,000 pages of words at you all at once, and not just words, experiences. And I do think that's why symbols, religious or mundane, open you up to some kind of psychic force, even if there's nothing weird or mystical about it. It is just pure mundane psychology. I believe this to be a fact. I think we all know it. You know what I mean? So that was thing number one. Thing number two.
Wait, before you move on, I just have been thinking about the swastika because, you know, it used to be an Asian
Hindu
thing for
symbol.
Good luck, right? Is it Hindu?
Oh, yeah. I get asked civilizations this all the time.
And then the Nazis came in aliens and like, fucked it up. You were, really?
Yeah, they didn't air the episode, I think, because it might have been controversial, but I filmed it and they paid me. So, yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
I don't really know what the question is, but it's like the symbol changed, and it changed because of the Holocaust, which is, you know, what's a bigger fucking thing than that? It's like if the CEO of Nike like went crazy and blew up his building or something, they'd probably have to stop using the Nike swoosh, right?
That is why symbols require a consensual definition, just like slang, you know? Like, you know, for the past 30 years, the word sick has meant good. But before the 90s, sick meant you have pathogens that are destroying you from the inside. You know what I mean? Like, society has to consent to these things. And then also, the swastika is still used in Buddhist and Hindu practice.
I know like Asian guys, I know one Asian guy who has it on his neck. has a tattoo of the swastika on his neck, and it's like, I don't know, man. Bro. I mean, like, I know what it means to you, but
bro, what's wrong with you?
It just seems like problematic. Like, you're gonna get confronted a lot, right?
Yeah. And so then if we're playing with the thought form paradigm, it could be that that symbol still has its powerful positive religious value. And some might say, well, because it's been worshipped for over 4,000 years, it has all that power where the Nazis only used it for under a decade, and it still reverberates as the symbol of like the evilest human shit you could do.
Sure.
So until
the red hat. The red hat's going to take over.
The red hat. Yeah. And that it's also so funny because it's the happiest thing you've ever seen for some people and the biggest nightmare you've ever seen to others. Simultaneously. Yeah. And one might say our elections then, like these two thought forms battling it out. So symbols are a shortcut to deep psychology, mystic or mundane. You don't have to believe, you could be absolute skeptic, absolute cynic, and still, I think, agree that symbols are a shortcut to your feelings and your thoughts. You know what I mean?
I just kind of wonder, I'm just thinking about like, maybe using the swastika was like a shortcut in some way, because like, okay, so this thing has 4,000 years of people ascribing to it a certain thing. Now I'm going to take it and use it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Does it still have power? Is there residual power? I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, I have a belief of why the Nazis used it. And I believe they were the good guys. They're on the side of fate. They were, you know, saving the world in their own way. How they got there, I don't know. But Hitler was into occult stuff.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't he use a symbol that he believed brought him extra power, that brought forth these, if I'm not saying he believed in the thought form thing, but if you believe in Hindu symbolism, you believe in the power of thoughts, I reckon. So if he believed in it, he's like, if I put this symbol on my dudes, they're getting extra power.
Yeah.
It's like a video game when you put the buff on a character.
Right.
You
know? That's like,
well, this is 20% better explosion damage.
Yeah. You just did a much more articulate way of saying like, yeah, it's like this thing has power. Now I'm going to take it. I'm going to use the power. Mm-hmm. But then also change what it represents.
Like, and let's just say you're really gullible. And this is just a coaster from IKEA for my coffee cup. But if I say this is an ancient druid amulet, it is made of the tree that Jesus's cross was carved from. And it's been blessed by 1 million saints. And if you carry it, you will get that job you want. And then you believe it, and then maybe it gives you confidence you didn't know you had.
That's the Dumbo like, feather, right?
I got the job because of the great coaster from IKEA,
right.
You know?
Right.
I got one too.
What's funny is right here is the movie that another movie no one likes is The Pin from Brad Bird's Tomorrowland. And in the movie,
you're so right. Nobody likes that.
No one likes it except for me.
You do.
And I got the pin because in the movie, there's actually a pin. And when you touch it, you go to a simulated future of the utopia that could be. And I thought that was cool. So I got the pin. It just happens to be sitting here because I was like, you know, throwing away old, or I'm a good person. I was donating old clothes to the victims, and I went.
Oh, nice.
I wasn't going to donate my fucking pin, though. I'm not.
No, of course not. They don't deserve the future world. That's for you.
Did I tell you I'm a good person?
I have so much clothes I haven't donated. Should I just run it up there and drop it on the street?
There was people collecting clothes, and not too many like dudes were donating. They were over capacity with women's clothes. Uh-huh. So I'm sure
I should do
the that. Other thing I wanted to say, which was sort of the like, we're ending this, what's a good metaphor?
Mm-hmm.
This comes from Albert Pike's Freemason book, Morals and Dogma, which I'm not supposed to have read, but it was
real quick before you get into this.
Yeah.
I just saw, and they probably did this years ago, but the Sikh a temple. I don't know what a
in Los Feliz.
Yeah, now it's a Mason lodge.
No way.
Yeah, did you know that?
No, I'll go next time I'm around there. I'll
right
go
there in Vermont.
Can we just like become Masons? I want to become a Mason. I want to.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to become one?
I do. I really do.
I do too. Okay. I do too. I watch.
Can we all go? Can we all just go to that?
I've been offered to be sponsored to join three different times, and I have not joined because I don't really want to be of any institution, but
Yeah, but really think about if they have beer there and the beer's like a dollar or whatever.
Well, I've had the good fortune to be able to hang out at a couple different lodges. When I was younger, I was sneaking around one looking for dirt and I got caught. And then I expressed my love of symbolism and they gave me a tour. And I actually really like Freemason philosophy a lot. There's great myths. Everyone I've met.
From what I've heard, I do too. They seem cool.
And I want to learn the secret language of.
I won't introduce you if you're looking to like desecrate their image through like secret
stuff.
No,
not at all. I just want to hang out with some bros and drink beer, man.
I mean, in essence, they are a philosophical group where you will be. These types of discussions are.
I love these types of discussions.
And they're aimed at, well, the one rule. Or there's a couple of rules. You can't talk about politics or religion.
Great.
Because it causes
perfect,
you know, strife and duality. And but you can't be an atheist. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what supreme intelligence you believe in. But
okay,
you
then believe. I'm covered. I'll just say Buddhist. It's fine.
But if you just believe there's a supreme intelligence, it's not any god that's been named.
Oh, yeah. I could do simulation theory. I think we are in a simulation. Does that work?
Some kind of grand architect type.
Sure. Okay. Sorry.
I can introduce you to folks and then you guys take it from there.
Let's do it.
To be honest, actually, the fact you have this podcast is open-minded exploration in the direction of learning about worldviews and symbolisms that will evolve you. That's the whole point. You're building yourself into a temple. You're you're an architect of the temple that is you. And what's the point of a temple to be a place
that energy wants to
hang out?
Yeah.
They have one of my favorite myths ever, which we're not going to get into. I'm sorry. But for people who want to do their own research, it is called the myth of Haramabif, the architect of King Solomon's temple. Might be the best and most useful myth I've ever heard. Now, the thing I wanted to, you asked me, is there like a metaphor?
Yeah.
It is from the book Morals and Dogma, which you can find the PDF online for free. I think it was maybe disrespectful that I read it, but I did. And it's great. Or at least, you know, like I don't remember most of it. It was over my head. But the first couple pages are incredible. And the metaphor is that man is, and I'm going to butcher this, but man's will and man's thoughts are a lot like throwing gunpowder up into the sky and lighting it. And it just goes, you know, just sort of dithers away. It's a quick flash and it's gone. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like how we focus our will and our thoughts. We're just got, especially social media and doom scrolling, and I'm guilty of this. You're just dithering your energy out. When you say, if you could just measure a little bit of gunpowder and put it in the correct container called a bullet, you don't necessarily even have to fire it, but it is now this powerful aimed thing. So the point of it, and I'll change it into my own metaphor, is you could just be scattered weak light or you could be a laser, right? And when it comes to what are thoughts, in any paradigm, whether you're an atheist skeptic or you're embracing any of these weird concepts we're talking about, I do believe the laser-focused super thought has a great power to it. And that power, again, mystic or atheist cynic, it attracts like-minded people. It attracts helpers, as Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss and a door will open where once there was only walls. I do believe this happens whenever I'm focused on a project. It attracts people who are like-minded. I'm not even looking for them. They just kind of show up. There's a something. And maybe it's just the way you carry yourself. I don't know. But the laser-focused thought, the laser-focused will, it's rare in this ADHD distracted universe of 2025 now. I got nothing done during the fires. Why? Because I was distracted by all this fire shit. News, text, wonders, people from out of town. Are you on fire? People get on the street. Should we evacuate? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And that's a fight or flight situation. It needed our focus, but turn it down a little bit. It's like, oh, I'm so concerned about the news. I'm so concerned about politics and my opinions about what the governor of this is doing and the president of that is doing. And then meanwhile, gossip over here. And meanwhile, I have to maintain this shit I don't even need. And now my energy's spent and I have not even given 1% of force towards the thing that matters. And then years go by and it hasn't been developed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So whether you're a skeptic or whether you're an ultra believer, I believe this formula is the same. Concentrated thought, less distraction, less things parasiting your energy away, diluting you away. One or two very strong things. When I've lived in that, it's a really rewarding era. Even if it's filled with suffering and difficulty, it's always like, I feel good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you're doing something. This is exactly, you're just mirroring all of my thoughts from last night. Like last night, I was like, Jesus Christ, fucking Wade, stop playing video games and like looking at the internet. I have a script that's done. I need to rewrite it so badly. If I would just focus on it, but then I go like, oh, but I'm like, it's in my head and I'm marinating on it. And it's like, well, idiot, like, it won't get down on the page until you like focus on it.
Right.
So I don't know. It's just interesting that you're saying that.
No, I fall victim to this a lot. And I was like bummed last night because I didn't get certain things done. Now that we've talked about the goal, which is just focused will or focused thought. And I think we all agree that's pretty cool and good and difficult. Then the next steps are, well, what's the mechanics of that? Because you can't just grind forever, but you also can't just lay on the couch forever. So then you start learning, this is then where, whether it's esoteric philosophy or just basic nutrition or basic psychology, what is the mechanics of the human? Because the human needs rest and the human needs action. What's up with that? And you explore that. So it's like, we're a machine, and we're a machine that like, is it at war with itself? What's the mechanics of that? I like the esoteric philosophies because they look at that and seem to be real. But either way, that's the know thyself. That's what I got to say about that.
There's one thing to sort of know that, and then another to be diligent and follow through on it, right?
And that's why I think even psychopath entrepreneurs, I'm not saying these are good people, psychopath entrepreneurs have a better grasp of spiritual concepts, even if they're 0% spiritual, because their psychopathy makes them be like, I must build this. I must make $1 billion, you know?
And
that's actually very impressive because that's a self-mastery, perhaps a self-mastery born of toxic attributes that someday they'll have to face and they will just crumple. But alas, I am actually impressed.
You got to go. Do you have anything to plug?
My website,
Instagram or
stephenreedy.com. And then I do have lectures around. Do your research. If you're watching this, you got research and up in your tinfoil hat. Go find it. You know, like I have a couple of lectures on stuff.
Classes. You got anything coming up?
I actually just gave a lecture on why the technology of symbolism recently. And I just made a video of it. I haven't put it anywhere. And I am also making a lecture on one music video I made that's filled with esoteric symbolism. Those are the two things. I've been asked to do some stuff, but I haven't committed to stuff because I was trying to, again, be laser focused,
right,
and not deluded. So to answer your question, what I have coming up, I don't know yet. But the possibility is there.
Yeah, let us know and we'll put a link in the description or whatever we do. I don't know.
Yeah, stephenreedy.com. And if you're looking for philosophical stuff, reach out to me and I'll send you stuff. I'll initiate you into the secret society.
Shit, that sounds good.
McDonald's.
Don't forget to introduce us to the Masons.
They are all good and they all keep their secrets. I don't know any of their secrets.
I'm not even interested in the secrets. That's just kind of like a bonus. I just kind of want to hang out and chill, you know? If I get some secrets, then it's like, oh.
And you'll hang out with smart people who like to think about.
Totally.
Things, you know, like deep. Just this. These conversations. Yeah, I have these conversations with them and I love it and I respect them a lot.
Willie, you want to take us out?
My parallel to all you said, all the good, great, fun things. I'm just going like I'm compartmentalizing this and trying to think of like how I've tried to teach my 7-year-old how to not just sit on YouTube, you know, and it's just like, well, you can find whatever you want on there. But if you let YouTube choose the next thing, then you're never gonna find what you want. So it's just like, yeah, same thing. You gotta be focused, but don't let external forces make choices for you.
It's maybe. Interesting because I've well, maybe or maybe you're opening your psychology to Instagram or YouTube.
Chaos. Actually, here, I'll say the last thing in this tradition. Next time your son is in a sad mode, because that's when they're receptive. Oh, Dad, I'm sad. Make him read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. No, but actually, I'm joking, but I'm not joking. You should read that book, both of you, because I do believe it is a summary. It's not trying to be any of the stuff we're talking about, but I think its point is the same. It's a short book, and the audiobook is even easier. I think it's like 2 hours. Meaningful work. Working towards it gets you out of the blues, which is, you know, not always easy, right?
Right.
So if your son could embrace the notion of searching for what's meaningful to him and what work is meaningful to him, and the understanding that work sucks, but then it's rewarding, and then he tastes that reward, that would be fucking cool as shit. Just saying.
I love it.
And with that, I'm out.
Thanks again for being here. You're a joy. Please come back anytime.
And, I'll come back anytime.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Go to patreon.com/reallifesci-fi. Willie and I are going to continue the conversation over there. Go see Companion January 31st. And just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Real life sci-fi.